Om Jnana Timinantasya Nananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroham Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srimad Bhagavad Gita As It Is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai Srila Prabhupada, founder, acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, savior of the modern world. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Today we're on text chapter 1, entitled Observing the Armies, and text should be number 28, if I'm not misinformed. Did we do 27 last?
Yes.
So then I'm okay. No, it's okay. I had it already. Thank you. I took. They just make a mess. So text number 28. Kindly repeat. Arjuna Vacha Drishtvenam Swajanam Krishna Yuyutsam Samupasthitam Sidanti mama gatrani Mukham cha parishushyati Arjuna uvacha Drishtvenam swajanam krishna Yuyutsam samupasthitam Sidanti mama gatrani Muham cha parishoshyati Arjuna uvacha Drishvenam swajanam krishna Yuyutsam samupasthitam Sidanti mama gatrani Muham cha parishoshyati Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna said, drishtva, after seeing, imam, all these, swajanam, kinsmen, Krishna, O Krishna, yuyutsam, all in a fighting spirit, samupasthitam, present, sidanti, are quivering, mama, my, gatrani, limbs of the body, mukham, mouth, cha, also, parishushyati, is drying up. Translation, Arjuna said, "My dear Krishna, seeing all my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up." Please repeat. Arjuna said, "My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities which are found in godly persons or in the demigods. Whereas the non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualifications by education and culture, lacks in godly qualities. As such, Arjun, just after seeing his kinsmen, friends, and relatives on the battlefield, was at once overwhelmed by compassion for them, who had so decided to fight amongst themselves. As far as his soldiers were concerned, he was sympathetic from the beginning, but he felt compassion even for the soldiers of the opposite party, foreseeing their imminent death. And while he was so thinking, the limbs of his body began to quiver, and his mouth became dry. He was more or less astonished to see their fighting spirit. Practically the whole community, all blood relatives of Arjuna, had come to fight with him. This overwhelmed a kind devotee like Arjuna. Although it is not mentioned here, still one can easily imagine that not only were Arjuna's bodily limbs quivering and his mouth drying up, but he was also crying out of compassion. Such symptoms in Arjuna were not due to weakness, but to his soft-heartedness, a characteristic of a pure devotee of the Lord. It is said, therefore, yasya asti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate suraha harau abhaktasya kuto mahat guna manorathenasiti dhavato bahihi. That means, this is from Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 18, text 12, and it means, one who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all the good qualities of the demigods. But one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. This is because he's hovering on the mental plane and is certain to be attracted by the glaring material energy. Arjuna uvacha, drishtvemam sajanam krishna, yuyutsam samupasthitam, sidanti manamagatrani, muhamcha parishushyati. Arjun said, "My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up." You can imagine. Can you imagine? Actually, it's hard to imagine this. It really is not easy to imagine. Everybody in your family, imagine. Everybody in your family on the other side of a battlefield, you're about to kill each other. It's not mythology, but it's not within our daily experience either. Of course, sometimes it so happens, the quirks of fate are indeed stranger than fiction, as they say. You can find yourself in circumstances that nobody could ever have imagined. We all have our pre-planned life in front of us. At least if we're young, we do. By the time you get old, then you see. From experience, we learn some things if we're in the right association, as we heard this morning. Anyway, so we have our plans for life, but we have experienced after a few decades, we realize that it never goes according to your plan. It's never according to what you expect to happen. So the last thing that Arjun could have expected was a situation like this. And it's understandable. His mouth was drying up. Anybody ever had your mouth dry up because of anxiety? It can happen. Or your limbs quivering. Sidanti mamagatrani means actually your limbs are shrinking back into the body. Sidanti, they're all sitting down. They're not moving. They're not going to obey. This is called advanced trauma. Acute trauma. The anxiety that Arjun was feeling. And here in the previous verse, we've heard already, Kripaya Paraya Avishta. He was, Avishta means to be absorbed in something, or it also means to be overwhelmed by something. What was he overwhelmed by? Parakripa. Parakripa. What does that mean? Supreme compassion. Or you can say it means transcendental compassion. Anyway, great compassion at the very least. So, the entire significance of Srila Prabhupada's purport, judging from what he has chosen, the one topic that he's chosen to speak on, is that he identifies Arjuna's parakripa, his extreme or advanced or transcendental compassion, with his pure devotional service. This is what Prabhupada is teaching us about this verse. Nobody else has said this. Most of the acharyas, in fact, Madhvacharya more or less just glosses over chapter 1. Ramanujacharya skips verses 27 to the end of the chapter, 47, I think. 20 verses, he just doesn't even bother to say anything. So there's very little commentary from the acharyas about this. Most of them just point out what do the words mean, or how the context gives rise to this question. For example, we've heard that Arjuna became overwhelmed with compassion and he vishidan idam abravit. He spoke these words. Naturally, we wonder, well, okay, what did he say? Sridhar Swami, I think it was, brings this point up. He makes this observation. Okay, so this is what he said. My mouth is drying up. I'm quivering with anxiety at this. These people are actually serious. Yuyutsam samupasthitam. They're here. Upasthit hum. That's what we say in Hindi. Present before me. They're ready to do this, actually. We've been talking, fighting words. But fighting words, and when you're actually fighting with weapons, you can imagine the anxiety. So it's come to this. Here he is. Now he's got to do something. This is where the mind wavers. When you have such a situation in front of you, you've got to make a decision. Mind. What does the mind do? The mind makes decisions, isn't it? These are the two functions. What do we call them? Sankalpa means yes. Vikalpa means no. This is what the mind does. This is the only thing that the mind does. Everything else is supplied by the intelligence, by the senses, by the ego. Mind only pushes the button or doesn't push the button. Just like this analogy was given by one of my godbrothers. Very nice. When you're in a lift, here we call them lifts. In America, we call them elevators. When you're in a lift and the door opens at some particular floor, then you're on the mental plane. Right? You have to make a decision. The door is not going to stay open forever. But you are going to make a decision. Definitely you will make a decision. It is axiomatic. You're going to make a decision. If the elevator door closes, then your decision is to not make a decision and you're going somewhere else. The decision has been made for you. Or you can step out of the elevator. Human life is also like this. Before the big door slams shut, that's called death. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with this human form of life? What have you got to show for it after the doors close? Where are you going? Kahan se aaya? Kahan jaoega? One Hindi poet asks us, where have you come from? Where are you going? Ekuch malam karna. Try to understand something about this. Okay, so Arjuna is at this point, and he's feeling it, because these are people that he loves. Ramanujacharya says about this, Bandhu snehena paraya kripaya dharma dharma bhayena cha. He's in anxiety, not only with his extreme compassion for those that he loves, bandhu sneha, friends and relatives, but also we're going to hear in a few verses, he's what he himself calls dharma samurha cheta. His consciousness is bewildered about what he should do and what he should not do. In Ramanuja's words, it's dharma dharma bhaya. He's got some shanka, some doubt or some fear. Am I going to do something dharmic here? Am I going to do something adharmic here? This is his concern. Why? Because Ramanuja says, Satu Partho Mahamana. He's a great-minded person, great-minded soul. What does that mean? Parama Karuniko. He's very, very compassionate, supremely compassionate, we can say. And Dirga Bandhu. He's thinking he's in this for the long term, his relatives. Paramadharmika also, he's supremely religious person. So his concern is, we'll find when he asks Krishna this point, I mentioned already. Anybody know the verse? Just now it's escaping me. Krishna, I'm confused about my duty and I've lost all composure because of Karpanya Doshopahata Swabhava. Prithami tvam dharma sumurha cheta. He's describing himself as dharma sumurha cheta. I'm completely bewildered about what I'm supposed to do, what I'm not supposed to do. This is a high-minded person. He's always thinking about Shreyas. If there is a salient characteristic of South Asian civilization, it is Shreyas. Concern for Shreyas. They will define it in different ways. The Sikhs define it in a different way. The Buddhists define it in a different way. We define it in another way. The Mimamsakas define it in another way. Shankaracharya defines it in a different way. But everybody is concerned not about Prayas, but Shreyas. This is a great civilization. So, if it were not great, then how could we be attracted by it? Those of us for whom this is completely foreign. So, the idea of a life dedicated to this higher ideal is something that is severely lacking in the modern world. But with Arjuna, it was swabhavik. It was his very nature, according to Ramanujacharya. So, Srila Prabhupada brings it down to this. Arjuna was thinking in his high-minded way, compassionate way, only because he was so pure in his heart, only because he was soft-hearted, and because he was a devotee. And then the real thrust of this purport is the verse that he quotes from 5th canto. Who spoke this verse? Do you know? Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana. Who spoke that verse? Anyone remember? If I'm not mistaken, I believe it's Prahlad Maharaj. But I might be mistaken.
Can you say it in English, please?
One who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all the good qualities of the demigods. But one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. This is one of those things about Krishna consciousness that strike us immediately. Just like I like to point out often, that I read many of editions of Bhagavad Gita in English before I got Srila Prabhupada's edition. And I have to admit, honestly, when I saw the title, Bhagavad Gita As It Is, I thought, now this sounds very presumptuous. That my Gita is the real Gita and these other Gitas are, this is the implication. I mean, since then, of course, that doubt has been laid to rest because having studied all the different acharyas and their commentaries on Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit, I can see that what Prabhupada is saying most of the time, 90% of the time, it's really no different than what the acharyas have said before him. And Krishna says very clearly himself in the text of the Bhagavad Gita that this is the way to understand Bhagavad Gita. Which text does he say that? Anyone know? So many of them. Not Bhakti Amam. We're talking about receiving this from devotees. So many others. Evam parampara praptam. That's one of them. Right? Tadvidhi pranipatena. Bhaktosi me sakhacheti. Ityadi. Okay, so here this kind of strikes us, especially the way that Prabhupada puts it in this first sentence here. Any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities that are found in godly persons or in the demigods. Whereas the non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualifications by education and culture, lacks in godly qualities. In other words, we say, this verse says, only the devotees have good qualities. The non-devotees never have any good qualities. And it sounds completely fanatical, doesn't it? Only we can be good. You people are always bad. That's what it sounds like. So, therefore I said, this is one of those striking statements that you kind of have to think about. So, let's do that. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana. First thing, right off the bat, he points out, Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on this Bhagavatam verse, we are talking about a particular kind of devotee, what Prabhupada calls a genuine devotee here. He is akinchana. What does akinchana mean? He doesn't have anything other than Krishna. He may have millions of dollars. He may have other assets. He may have followers. He may have so many things, but in his heart, he feels he doesn't have these things because they actually belong to Krishna, and he's only using those things for Krishna. That person is actually very rare. That person is actually pretty rare. But we all have, under the rubric of what we call yukta vairagya, we all engage in so much sense gratification. But the fact of the matter is that a person with genuine devotion, this is the person who develops all the good qualities. All the good qualities. Sam asate suraha, it's stated here. Sam asate. Sridhar Swami comments, I think it's Sridhar Swami. Maybe it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says that in the non-devotees, the demigods only partially manifest some of their good qualities. Not all of their good qualities. Only some of them. And even if they manifest really good qualities instead of flaws, because you can see them as flaws from a devotional perspective, because they're non-devotional, therefore they're flaws. Like serpents with jewels on the hoods, we say. Good qualities that entangle you further in material existence, or that allure other people who are also infatuated with material existence, those are not really qualities at all, are they? There's an interesting thing about this. I was recently in South India. South India people they're immensely enthusiastic about worshipping demigods, and it seems like they're kind of a little bit more towards Shiva and his family. Those demigods in particular, they favor. So we were talking about Vinayaka. They call him Vinayaka in Tamil, Nadu. So what does Vinayaka mean, actually? Nayaka? Anybody know? Nayaka. Leader, ni, nayati, person who leads you is called nayaka or neta, same root, ni. So nayaka means a leader. So where is he leading you? Vi nayaka. You have to interpret this somehow. This upasarga prefix in Sanskrit means two things. It can mean visheshena nayati. He especially leads you somewhere. Or it can mean also means vigata, against. It means especially, and it also means against. So one of Prabhupada's godbrothers is very insightful about this. He said, this Vinayaka actually means opposition leader. Opposition leader. Because he is the one removing all of the obstacles to your material enjoyment in the material world. And what does he do by that? He entangles you further in this karmic cycle. Therefore, he's leading you in the wrong direction. He's not actually doing you a favor. Now, before you start getting nervous that he's blaspheming demigods, that we have to emphasize that actually Prabhupada also writes in his, or at least he used to, I think they edited it out now, but in Nectar of Devotion, he used to have the statement that devotees who are interested in making advancement through an arch and a vritti should in the beginning worship Ganesh, Vaikuntha deities like Ganesh. So how do we reconcile this? These two radically different ideas. Actually, Ganesh has his form in the spiritual world as well. He's called Vishvaksena. And again, in South India, any temple you see of Vishnu, you'll find usually Vishvaksena is also there somewhere. He's the commander-in-chief, you can say, of Lord Vishnu's army. So that is Ganesha's spiritual form. Actually, all of us have a material form. We're in the material form right now. But we have our spiritual form as well. And all the demigods also have their... Two Saraswatis are there. Durga's on one side. Lakshmi Devi's on the other side. All the demigods. They all have this dual nature. Anyway, without getting too far afield. Samasate sura sarvari gunais tatra. All the demigods reside in that person who is an akinchana bhakta, an exclusive 100% pure devotee, or as Prabhupada says here, genuine devotee. They all reside there, and they reside with their qualities in full, sarvair gunai, in full, not partially. Partially they reside with the non-devotees, or temporarily they reside with the non-devotees, or both. But they always reside in full with the devotees, pure devotees. Therefore, we can say this very easily. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvayagunais tatra samasate sura. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained this in three ways. We know devotees do not worship demigods. Narottam Das Thakur explicitly prohibits this. I mean, we can worship them, we can respect them, this is the point, but we don't worship them and beg boons from them. We depend for our benedictions exclusively on Krishna and his pure devotees. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, because the devotees don't worship demigods, their bhakti is exclusive, and bhakti itself serves the demigods. Devotee doesn't have to serve the demigods. Bhakti does it for him. They're pleased, in other words, when we are servants of Krishna. Then that is the best way to please the demigods as well. Actually, one time it's described in the Sammohana Tantra, it's described that Parvati saw that her husband is chanting on Japamala in Kailas. And she's wondering, well, everybody in the whole world is worshipping you. Now, whose name are you chanting? Tatra, what is it? Kasya Stotra Maheshwara. So then Lord Shiva spoke to her. Ah, you're very smart. You figured out that I'm worshipping somebody. I'm going to tell you, but don't tell anybody else. This is very confidential. Gopaniyam, gopaniyam, gopaniyam prayatnataha. Be very quiet about this. He said, I'm chanting the names of Gopala. Chanting the names of Krishna. Thousand names. Gopala Sahasranama is there. Here in Vrindavan, there's one temple in Loy Bajar. They're supposed to be chanting 24 hours a day. They don't actually do it, but once in a while you see that they're actually doing it. Anyway, so the devas are always pleased when one becomes a devotee, and therefore Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, not only do they reside in full, but they reside forever with the devotees. Why? Because he says the demigods think, this saintly person is so nice that I want his association. All these people, ungrateful people, are coming and bothering us for their temporary karmic boons that entangle them further in this whole mess that they themselves created. We have to take this ugly task of helping them in that business, vigata nayati, right? Leading them in the wrong direction, as we've already described. Now here's finally a good one who's figured out what's happening, and he's doing the right thing. Let me take this person's association and stay with him, then I can become purified. Because most of the time, the demigods are not 100%. They're not akinchana bhaktas, just like most of us are not akinchana bhaktas. You see? So they are also appreciating very much the association of the devotees. So how do they stay with him? He says, the devas, they coexist with the gunas of the devas, that is to say, they coexist with the doshas of the devas in the non-devotees. And to the extent that we're devotees or not, this is the case. But we know from Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto that the devas are residing in our senses anyway, as the presiding deities of the senses. So the devas are already there within us, but they like to stay. With the non-devotees, they don't like to stay. They say, as soon as this guy's karma is up, I'm out of here. Because they don't appreciate it. Just like sometimes when we're traveling. Now, unfortunately, here in India, even you get this. There are places, especially if you take the Yamuna Expressway, not so much in the dhabas, but they're coming up with these shiny new stores that intoxicate everyone. And they're serving all sorts of unmentionable things to eat in those places. We don't even like to go in there to buy water because it's just an inauspicious environment. This is how the devas feel. When they have to enter into the senses of the materially conditioned souls in order to administer their karma, but they don't actually like to associate or stay there in that position. But when somebody actually surrenders, then they don't want to leave. Even the karma runs out, but they still want to stay. And they do so. This is Krishna's great mercy. So Prabhupada is therefore quoting, Harava bhaktasya kato mahadguna. How can there be any such good qualities in the non-devotees? Now you can see it. Now we can see. These non-devotees, by definition, they're running away from Krishna. Ishad apeta viparya yasmriti. They have forgotten about Krishna. They're not going to surrender to Krishna. So how can they actually have all the good qualities of the devas in full and forever? These three things we've been discussing. They cannot. It's not possible. Why? Manorathena. Because they're on the mental platform. A little while they're running on some good karmic fumes, I say. Sometimes you can run in a car. Petrol is no more, but the car will still keep going because the fumes from the petrol are enough to keep the engine running for a little while. This is what it is like in modern India. They've given up their culture. They've given up dharma or any concern with dharma. We already mentioned in the beginning the distinction between modern mind and Arjuna's mind. Ramanuja calls him Mahamana, and we're called, Duratma or Durmana. So the tank is empty, and they're just running on fumes, and for some time the qualities may appear to be there, but they'll go away. Chanchala Lakshmi. What is Lakshmi in charge of in this mature world? Pretty much everything. Madhvacharya says, Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Sarga, Mahavibhuti, Vritti, Prakasha, Niyama, Avrita, Bandha, Moksha. 11 things, he says. The creation of this material cosmic manifestation, its sustenance, its destruction. Lakshmi Devi is affecting all of this by her sidelong glance only. And within the creation, there's sub-creation also, sarga, vritti, everybody's occupation, we all have one. We heard this morning about the varnashram system. Everybody by default, if you have a swabhava, you have a corresponding swadharma, and you've got to make a choice. That's why Arjuna was concerned about dharma, dharma bhaya, as Ramanuja pointed out for us already. You have a dharma waiting for you, but you're not in touch. Therefore, Prabhupada said the remaining 50% of his mission is to get in touch with that and do something before the elevator door slams shut again. And you have to go who knows where. In chapter 17, the first several verses of that chapter, Baladevida Pushan describes who are the pretas. We heard this morning about the Dvija Bandhus, those who are, should be twice born, but they don't really pay much attention to it, like modern people. Baladevida Pushan says, those are the people who end up as pretas. Pretas. Pret means somebody who's gone on into the next world, but he's not gone on with dharma. He's gone on with his papa. It is a sin to neglect your dharma. So, this is the modern world. People are not mahamana. Therefore, how can they have mahat gunas? Not possible. Manorathenasati, because they're hovering on the mental platform. Dhavato bahi. They're just running around externally. Now, Sridhar Swami makes a final comment here. He says, why are the devotees akinchana? What makes them akinchana? Dhavata. Actually, dhavata, does anybody know this word? Dhavata in Sanskrit? What does it mean? Running, exactly. What are they running from? He says, the akinchana devotees are running away from the mental platform. They want to keep it far distant. Durena, Krishna says in the early chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Keep this thing far distant by devotional service. Mental platform, you see? So Sridhar Swami points this out about the devotees. This is the characteristic that defines an akinchana bhakta. He's running away far from the material platform, mental platform. What is he doing instead? He's taking shelter of the lotus feet of his spiritual master, and that bona fide guru will engage him in Hari Bhakti. By engaging in Hari Bhakti, he gains all the good qualities of the demigods in full, and they retain within him. So Arjun was an example of this. This is the point. Arjun is an example of all these good qualities, and Prabhupada is dilating here on just one of them. His parakripa, as was mentioned in the next, yesterday's text. Kripa. Kripaya parayavishto vishidam nidam abhravit. These words are being spoken. For the rest of the chapter, Arjuna is describing all the things that are whirling in his mind at the moment. He's quite confused, as we said. But because he's a devotee, we can see that these wonderful qualifications are there. They're manifesting. And as this conversation progresses, we will see how things turn out. Of course, we all know it already. We've read Bhagavad Gita. So we'll be discussing it in future classes. I'm going to stop here. Does anybody have any questions or any comments? Yes, Prabhuji. I don't see a mic here. That is the answer. Yasyagnyaya brahmati sampratha kala chakra. You gave the example, Surya. When we see Surya first thing in the morning, we offer our pranam. Surya namaskar. Yogis especially practice like this. He is the presiding deity of eyesight. He's also the demigod in charge of health. But he dispenses our karma. Govindasya Agnyaya, by the order of Govinda. Only by that order. Only because of that order, he's fulfilling his dharma. But he's conscious, whether we're performing our dharma or not, he is performing. Anybody remember last time the sun was not on time? It's oxymoronic. That is dedication. With that kind of dedication, if you perform your duty for 100 births, then you can become Brahma, it says in the Bhagavatam. So, he is supplying some good qualities to some degree for some time. This is the point. The real point is that it's regulated by karma, and as an obligation, he's performing his duty by dispensing karma under Krishna's direction. Maya tyakshena prakatihi suyate sacharacharam ityadi. So, but he doesn't really enjoy it so much. What he enjoys is when he sees that this person is really becoming a devotee. Then he likes to be there. This is the point. Is it clear? I thought I explained. All of them. The logic applies to all of them. Yeah, all the demigods. Samasate sura. All the sarvaya gunais tatra samasate suraha. Plural. Suraha. All the devas. Okay? Anything else? Yes. Yes, good point. I was thinking about this. We're talking about parakripa, transcendental faith, I said. I suggested at least, I implied that it can mean transcendental faith, but it doesn't seem to be so. Because, as Ramanuja said, he's confused on the basis of bandhusneha, bandhusnehena, dharma dharma bhayena cha. He's bewildered by these things. So it would seem it is pious. It is a symptom of his pious mindset that he has compassion like this. And although his intelligence is polluted, his heart is in the right place. Krishna, therefore, can deal with him later on. It's a good example of this principle. Yesham tvantagatam papam jnanam punyakarmanam. Because Arjuna is an adhikari, because he has good qualification, because he is dharmatma, we can say. Therefore, he can understand this thing. In other words, because he's a devotee. To be dharmatma and to be a devotee is the same thing. That is the point of the verse in question here. When a person is sincere about Krishna consciousness, then even if he's not perfect yet, he is advancing. This is the definition of sincerity means you're advancing. Actually, the definition of Aryan means that you're advancing. When you stop advancing, then you stop to be a devotee, you stop to be an Aryan, and then you revert to whatever it is that the modes impel you to do. So yeah, it's true that Krishna will deal with his polluted intelligence in the coming chapters. Not that his intelligence was actually polluted, but this whole drama is being played out with Arjuna as one of the main players, actors. So his compassion is not maybe perfect because it's based on this, ostensibly on this bodily conception of life, but Krishna is going to deal with it anyway. Is that okay? Is it answering your question?
Yes, you haven't exactly touched on the highest religious principles as exposed by the Mahajans.
Right. Yeah, well, this is Parodharma. Yeah. No, this is the point. Arjuna was absorbed in Sadhana Dharma. Maybe Varnashram Dharma, mundane dharmas. He was absorbed in this. That's a fact. In the beginning chapters. Not that Krishna ever defeats Arjuna's position. Actually, we don't find anywhere that Krishna takes any of the arguments that Arjuna's presented in these early chapters and turns them on their head. But he doesn't really go there. He wants to raise the level of discussion to this platform of Parodharma in which you can see very clearly the principle of this verse that Prabhupada is quoting in his purport. How it is that a person who is practicing Parodharma, automatically his lesser dharmas are taken care of, practically speaking, automatically. That is to say, a devotee by nature cannot also be sinful. This is the point. Because the good qualities of the devas are there, all of them, in full, for good. This is the effect of Parodharma, and only Parodharma can affect this, and therefore we emphasize Parodharma. Is it clear? Bhakti, especially in this Kali Yuga, by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is expected that a person who is pure-heartedly doing this without offense becomes completely pure in his mind, like Arjuna was, and he will manifest the same kinds of qualifications that Arjuna manifested. Okay. Anything else? Oh, he's asking, no?
Maybe I missed the point. But,
okay.
You were talking that about the Bhagavad Gita as it is. How yes. am I supposed to convince somebody that why did you at last you read so many other Bhagavad Gitas? Why? What was how do you say it? What made the decision that you say yes, this is the one?
That
so how can I convince people that this is the one they should?
You're asking
because they say you entered every book as interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you're asking me to do is to compact 30 or 40 years of experience into one or two sentences. And I think it's a very good question. But for me, as I said, you know, I actually have taken the time and the trouble to study these things in great detail. And not only Srila Prabhupada's commentary, but also his predecessor's comment. And not only his own predecessors, but throughout his books we find he's quoting Viraghavacharya, he's quoting Bilva Mangala Thakur, he's quoting Madhvacharya, Vijayadwaj Tirtha, so many other great acharyas. And they're all saying the same thing. And then these neo-Advaitin businessmen come along and they're saying something different. Even they're differing from Shankaracharya. So what is their authority? Maybe if that's a few sentences that we'll do, I mean, you can tell them that I told you this. It helps to have this sense of context. You know, I went to college, I studied these things in depth, you know, I learned several languages. It's, you know, it's not easy to really, not everybody can do that maybe,
but maybe I should
that was my experience.
Maybe beginners, in Europe especially, I mean in the Western world. So can I say, please try.
Here's okay, here's a one or two sentence answer that should convince a sensible person, because it's common sense. Maybe 100 editions of English Bhagavad Gita, I mentioned already, they never made one person Krishna conscious. Now here's one edition of Bhagavad Gita, and it's made hundreds and thousands of people Krishna conscious. How do you explain it? Anybody can, you don't have to, it's not rocket science. Anybody with half a brain can figure this out. There is some Shakti in this Bhagavad Gita that is not there elsewhere, period.
But they should try to read it first. Get them so far.
Well, this argument can help them do that, I think. I mean, look, all these people are doing this. You know, they're all giving up. You know, it's not an easy thing for an ordinary materialistic person to give up the kinds of sinful activities that are so prevalent in today's age. How do they do it? They must be experiencing some higher taste. You point this out. Is that okay?
Because they have several Bhagavad Gitas. They say, all Gitas.
All Gitas are the same. Yeah, but they're not the same. You have to demonstrate, practically. Demonstrate that. Look, the hundreds of thousands of people in Moscow. What's inspiring them? Are they all in Maya? Are they all sentimentalists? I've been doing this for four decades. Is that on the basis of sentiment? There's some substance here. And as I said, you go and look, and all the acharyas are saying what Prabhupada is saying. Nobody's saying what these other people are saying. This, you know, I don't want to name any names, you know, but Murugi Mission, they're not saying the same thing. And, you know, there's this Pune people not saying the same thing, and like that. You understand who I'm talking about? Okay? Yes, Prabhuji. Let's go microphone, Daniel.
Just you said that devotees, they don't worship demigods, but here in see the gopis, they were worshipping demigods to get Krishna as their husband.
We find this regularly throughout our shastras, as a matter of fact. Many examples of Krishna's own pure devotees taking shelter of devatas. Srila Prabhupada advised us not to emulate that, or not to try to imitate that, because people in this world, you know, where they're absorbed in Mahamaya instead of Yogamaya, they will get the wrong idea, and it will kind of solidify this misconception of avajananti mam mudha manushim tanamashritam. See, Krishna is also worshipping Shiva, that means Shiva supreme. Actually, people say these things. Krishna's gopis are also worshipping Katyayani, therefore what's wrong? They're devotees and they're our ideals, exemplars. Why can't we do it also? This is the logic. It is logical. But Prabhupada said, you have to understand that when the heart is completely pure, these things are not so much of an issue. That's one way to look at it. There are many different ways to answer this question. Is that satisfactory? Anything else? I mentioned, I qualified, that one has to take shelter of pure devotees, because sometimes the demigods are not pure devotees. They can help, actually. I can say something about this. Even demigods that are considered to be part of this material creation and are not particularly known for being pure devotees, they can help the Sankirtana mission, and there's evidence that they sometimes do. So we should respect them. This is the point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even Srila Prabhupada also respected them. But we don't worship them with some ardent desire that we're hoping that they will fulfill. That is not a good example for a pure Vaishnava, because the injunction is that we do not do that. Is it clear? We have to set the example of exclusive devotion. This is the point. Not fanatical devotion, but exclusive devotion.
One more thing. Krishna was pastime when he was killing the demons and demons. So all the demigods were coming in and glorifying the Lord in this showering of flowers and other things.
Yes. But we find just as many examples of Krishna glorifying them. Shiva, he's worshipping also. Hanuman, he's worshipping. Gopis, he's worshipping. You see? This bhakti is not so easy thing to understand for a materially contaminated mind. This is the point. As long as the mind is materially contaminated, certain things we don't really advertise so much. We keep them a little bit private, because it will be misinterpreted. It can only be misinterpreted. First you engage them somehow, let their mind become a little bit purified, then they begin to see on their own. But they see, as we heard this morning, in a different way. They see through Shastra Chakshu instead, and that's a completely different vision. Is it good?
Okay.
Anything else? Yes.
Where's the thinking going on? Will you talk about mental background, mental speculation? Where is that going on?
Thinking means intelligence. I mean, thinking is maybe not the greatest word. Sometimes the Sanskrit and the English words don't match up 100%, so it can lead to some confusion. But thinking in the terms in what we call viveka, discrimination, that is a function of the intelligence. Thinking in terms of decision-making, that is the mind. We use the same word for both because we don't make a distinction in English. Just like for us, dharma means so many contradictory things in English because we don't have a word for it. We don't have the word because we don't have the concept that requires that word. That's a big topic. But thinking can be either decision-making or it could also be discrimination. But the mind only makes decisions.
What about desiring?
It makes the decision based on the desire. The desire is identified by the intelligence. It's screamed at us by the senses. And, the mind will make that decision. This is Sankhya. That's why it's important to know Sankhya, which is why it's taught both in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Sankhya philosophy is permeating Bhagavad Dharma throughout all of our shastras. We have to be very much in touch with that, because only through the agency of Sankhya can we understand the injunctions of the shastra. Otherwise, they don't make sense, and as long as they don't make sense to us, we won't follow them. The intelligence has to be convinced. That's why the Sankhya philosophy is important. I mean theistic Sankhya, not this pseudo-Sankhya. Is that clear? Well, if you see, if you understand Sankhya, if you understand what we call Sambandhagyan, the categories of material existence and how they're interacting, then, and how the soul is contaminated and how its material existence, conditional consciousness, is perpetuated by material involvement, then the injunctions of the Shastras make sense. Otherwise, you know, it just, all, if we're on the animal platform, approaching it from the mental platform, animal platform means mental platform, then we just, all we can perceive in the Shastric injunctions is that these things are telling me not to do what I want to do, and I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. We do this because the intelligence has not been purified yet. That's why Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and that's why Sankhya is included in Bhagavad Gita. And the same thing with the expanded version in the Bhagavatam, where the intelligence has to be purified, then the mind will automatically surrender to it. Is that okay? Anything else? Oh, one Mataji, yes. Yes.
There's a comment like, Bhagavan Shiva has two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesha.
Yes.
So Kartikeya is the commander of Devata's army.
Yes.
That's why he's called as Nayak.
Yes.
And Vinayak means both the brothers were competitors, kind of enmity cause. So that's why the two names are given.
We find throughout the Shastras that sometimes there are different ways of looking at the same thing and explaining the same thing. Yeah. So yeah, that's another way to see it. That's another way to see it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's why Nayak, he's ruling South India and Ganesha is the deity in North India.
So they say. Yeah. He's Tamil god, Kartikeya. I know Kartikeya very well. I actually go to Tiruchendur every year. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I spent about a half an hour in front of the deity, which is pretty rare. You can't sit there in front of the deity for half an hour. What do you do for 45 minutes? I was in front of the deity. What do you do in front of a demigod for 45 minutes? Think about it. So I got some realization. Okay, anything else?
What is the reference for Ganesha in Ashoksena?
You have to interpret Prabhupada's statement that Ganesha is a Vaikuntha deity. That's one thing. That's the nectar of devotion. And I don't know how to interpret this. This is called what Jiva Goswami calls ananyatopapati. The logic that you cannot explain anything by any other means, therefore it has to be this. You see? So, Ganesh we know is a Vaikuntha deity. Vishwaksena is very well known also in the Shastras as Vaikuntha deity. They must be the same person. Shuklambara dharam vishnum shashivaranam chaturbhajam prasanna ityadi, right? Sarva vignopa shantaye. Is that okay? Off the top of my head, that's the best I can do at the moment. There must, you know, I'm going to say that if you look through the agamas, you'll find this information. Maybe in the Puranas as well. Pancharatra agamas. He says what?
In Sat
Kriya Sardhipika.
So Gopal Goswami is really against, like, even going down to demigods. Like, he's really strict about it. So
yes. That is, I said, that's the injunction is there. But the spirit should be, I mean, for that matter, Padma Purana tells us that if you discriminate between Shiva and Vishnu, then you're an Amaparabhi. It says that. You see? So what does it mean? It means you don't see them as independent of Vishnu. This is the important thing. You don't identify them as Vishnu, but you also don't see them as independent of Vishnu. This is a very important lesson for Indians in particular, because Indians always see the devatas as independent of Vishnu or independent of each other. They're not. You can get realization of this, but you have to practice bhakti yoga seriously. And then you will realize that they're not actually, that they're not, you know, competing with one another. This is the point. They're all on the same side. They're all pushing the same agenda. They're all in harmony. That is the idea when we say you should not just make a distinction between them. They have their individuality, but they're not opposed to each other, and they're not independent of each other. And Vishnu is the supreme. This is the point. This conclusion has to come, but it mainly comes through practice, application of these principles that we hear. The realization will come. Is that okay? Yes. I mentioned this.
And many views are there that because he was going to kill Rama, and that's why he first worshipped Lord Shiva.
Yes.
And the second opinion I heard that because he killed Rama, and it was a sin to kill a Brahman. That's why he had to, the Sanskrit Rama told him to make a shivling and worship.
Yeah, but he worshipped Rameshwaram before he went to Lanka, not afterwards.
He went afterwards.
Ah.
After coming back from Lanka.
Ah.
After killing Raman.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this kind of thing can be reconciled by kalpa bheda, because the same pastime plays itself out age after age after age after age after age. But it's sometimes a little different. You see, so sometimes he can do it before, sometimes he may do it after. This happens. It's a little bit like this. Giridhara Swami gave a nice analogy. I don't know if you have supermarkets here yet. You have, say, you know, in Loi Bajar mein, right? Lal Chashma Ghar hota hai, na? So there's two or three of them all over the place. You know, it's the same store. You're going to find the same stock, and it's going to be organized pretty much in the same way because it's a chain store. But because the physical building will be slightly different, it's going to be each outlet will be a little bit different than the other one, huh? So this is what it's like when the Lord performs his pastimes. He comes, Rupa Goswami describes this in his Loku Bhagavatamritam, and also to some degree Jiva Goswami describes in Bhagavat Sandarbha. The Lord will come and perform his pastimes, but due to the different, what is it that precipitates the creation of the material world? What precipitates? Why is it? What necessitates the creation of the material world? Think about it. Because of our desires. Okay. Now the jivas are unlimited, and their desires are uncontrollable and unpredictable. Who knows what they're going to do? Every time the creation is affected, it's got to accommodate all those dynamic desires. So it's always going to be a little bit different. Every new creation will be a little different. Because the creation is a little different, because you're working with different individuals, therefore the thing has to play out in a slightly different way. Just like we hear, Gajendra Mokshana. There's a place here in India that they say this happened. Or Ahobilam is another one. Narasingha Dev, they say, appeared in Ahobilam. But according to Bhagavatam, these things happen in the heavenly planets. So how do you reconcile? The kalpa bheda. And different kalpas, maybe that, you know, it can be sambhavoga. You see? For common people, it's very difficult to understand. That's why Krishna says, tad vidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. You go to the guru, his guru has to be coming in parampara, the shastra yonidvat, whole thing has to be coming ultimately from shastra. Now you can make sense of it, you can see. But you have to do this. You have to practice this. Then you'll see. Otherwise, you have to put faith. Faith is only good as, you know, if you have it. And if you're pious, you will have it. If you're impious, you won't have it. See? So faith works until you get realization. I mean, we always have to have faith. Faith is always valuable. But my point is this. This is scientific, and you will get the realization if you follow the process. It just, you got to do it. It's like Ayurveda. I am on an Ayurvedic diet. It's really, it's a super hassle on steroids, Ayurveda. And it takes forever, and it's really not so easy. But if you do it, then your health improves. Zurur. It's a bilkul pakka. You see? So this process is like that. What is that verse? Yatanto yoginash chainam pasyantyatman yavastitam yatanto prakatatmano nainam pasyantyatyatasaha. Krishna says in chapter 15, those who are actually practicing this thing, they see everything very clearly. Those who are not practicing, even they try to see it, they can't understand it because the consciousness is clouded, muddied with material thoughts and bad habits and anartas and sinful reactions and other sorts of mala, you see. So Sridhar Swami says, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat akinchina. This verse that Prabhupada has quoted in his purport, it's referring to the character of a person who has become purified by devotional service. Puta madbhavam agataha, Krishna says. How does he get purified? Bahavo jnana tapasa, by the austerity of knowledge. What is the austerity of knowledge? I said, you have to take the trouble and open the books and read them. You have to do it regularly, every day. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. You have to take this trouble. And even when you learn the philosophy, that is still trouble, Ramanujacharya says, what is the trouble then? Then the trouble becomes, how are you going to convince all these other people who are still down there? So it's always a hassle. It's always an austerity. But Krishna says, if you take this austerity, then you get purified, and then you see everything very clearly. Devotees don't have any questions. There is no question that Prabhupada couldn't answer. If you want this easy answer to your question, what is it to convince me about this? It left no stone unturned. And only Prabhupada does this because he has realization, because he is a devotee. This is the point. Paramparagata bhakta. Is it clear? Anything else? Okay.
I have one last question.
Yes. Sankhya is...
I know it's something, the study of the phenomena.
Yes, it is described in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. You can read about it there. Sankhya philosophy. It's one of the Shaddarshanas. In classical Hinduism, we divide the different schools of Vedic interpretation into 6 schools. So one of those is Sankhya. And Sankhya is extremely influential even on the other schools. So we also accept it, although we technically belong to the Uttara Mimamsa or Vedanta school. The Purva Mimamsakas accept Sankhya. The yogis accept Sankhya. Sankhya, of course, accepts Sankhya like this. The categories of Sankhya are that there is a spirit soul who is entangled in the material world. What is that material world? That material world consists of so many elements. Just like in atomic physics, we divide everything up according to so many elements. Sankhya does the same thing. So there's earth, there's water, there's fire, there's air, there's ether, ityadi. Mind, intelligence, falls. Those are 8 separated material energies that Krishna mentions. There are actually 24 constituent elements of this material world, and the spirit soul is entangled in this way. It's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam at greater length. Sankhya in the Bhagavad Gita is very kind of, he kind of glosses over it very easily. You can check in the 3rd canto. 2nd canto will be helpful as well. 3rd canto is even better. You can find this. Kapila Dev's teachings are talking about Sankhya. Teachings of Lord Kapila, Prabhupada's lectures on the topic have been put there. But if you want the system of Sankhya's as a philosophy, you're going to find it distributed throughout Prabhupada's purports. And I think that this was deliberate strategy on Prabhupada's part in order to get us to read his purports. In this age, we find many different approaches for studying Prabhupada's books, especially in academic ways. And they're not traditional. They may be helpful. But it seems to me that Prabhupada took a very traditional approach to imparting all this knowledge through mainly through repetition rather than a systematic overview kind of a system that we're used to because we're busy.
So Prabhupada's first book about Sankhya is Canto
2? Yeah, you can see that and you can compare also with what he says about it in his lectures and teachings of Lord Kapila. Canto 3, sorry, not Canto 2. So, yeah, that's you're going to find a lot of information there. Canto 2 is also helpful, but the main thing is that Prabhupada has, I think, deliberately distributed this information throughout his purports to get us to read them. Because those jnanis who just want to control things through their knowledge or just want to entertain themselves through their knowledge, you know, they're going to be frustrated by that process.
No, reading this...
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. There are six philosophies, and they're divided into three pairs. So Sankhya and Yoga are very closely related. Sankhya is the principle that you are entangled, you are a spirit soul, you're entangled in this material world, and you're entangled by all these elements. Okay? By discriminating the difference between myself and these 24 elements, a person should come to the realization, that intellectual realization, that yes, I'm actually different from this body. At that point, you can practice... You can begin to apply that principle in a mechanical system, and that's called yoga. Ashtanga yoga is just one aspect of it. There are many others. But it's meant to be the lab, so to speak. Like when we go to college, there's a lecture, and then there's the laboratory. You have to actually apply what you learn in the lecture. See? So yoga functions in that way. Sankhya and yoga are very closely related. And of all the yogis, we know what Krishna says at the end of chapter 6. The person who is worshipping me is actually considered to be the best one. But the Sankhya system and the yoga system, they should cultivate our intelligence and they should convince our intelligence so that the intelligence can convince the mind to actually surrender to Krishna. In his Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he mentions all sorts of things that one can do to come to a higher realization of the self. And at the very end of this long list, he says, Ishvara pranidhanadva. He said, or you can just focus your mind on God. It's a very simple approach, but it's simple that should not be mistaken as easy. It's not easy because we have infected hearts only. That's the only reason. It's actually very easy to just sit and chant Hare Krishna and be satisfied with that. Mechanically, it's very simple. But because the mind is infected, the heart is infected, therefore, we cannot, we cannot take it seriously. Is that okay?
Yes. Good.
Yeah.
Well, yes. This is so important. Very good information. Very clear. I like to have the. Do you get a copy of this, for example, of this lecture? I don't know your name.
Oh, you want a copy of today's lecture?
Today's lecture, your lecture.
Okay.
Like
yeah, I can give it to
can
you.
Can you send it for me to my email or something?
Oh.
No.
Okay, we can discuss this after the class. Any more questions? Otherwise, my phone is ringing.
Rabu, you mentioned the functions of the mind. Yes, only say yes or no.
Yes.
Then, but what about the Gita says feeling, thinking, and willing? There's a lot of things there.
Yeah, you can say that. See, here's the thing. The mind is... that's a good point. The mind is, in Sanskrit, is not really different from the heart. The heart and the mind, there's no real clear distinction. They're kind of the same thing. Cheta, right? Cheta, hridaya, mana, that's not very clearly distinguished. So the feelings are also what the mind is screaming at us. The desires are also what the mind, you see. Willing means to desire. But I think Prabhupada uses this term willing in the sense of like exercising volition. You've decided that I'm going to do something. That is a decision. So thinking is, as I said to him, that thinking means I'm going to make a decision about this. Willing means you've actually made the decision. Feeling is the strong urge that I either want it or I don't want it. You see? Just like when you hear something that you really just, it just really, really bothers you, that is the mind. We object. Mind says, no, I don't like this. You see, we know it immediately. You see? And similarly, if you hear something that very much appeals to you, then the mind will say, yeah, I want more of this. You see? That is the mind. But it has to be chastened by the intelligence. The intelligence has to discipline this mind and keep it in order. The mind is actually the disciple of the intelligence. But the intelligence has to be there to begin with. In the modern world, people are not even using their intelligence. And as I said, you know, many, many times in English, we don't even have a word for it. English, Western languages in general, they don't make a distinction between the mind and the intelligence because they're not acquainted with Sankhya philosophy. In Sankhya, the mind and the intelligence are two different things. And once you see that distinction, then so many things are clarified instantly. Otherwise, you know, our thinking is muddled and tamasic because of ignorance only. Is it okay? Okay, it's getting late. Sad bhajane wale, though. Koi Indo-Aryan Bhasha. I think any of the Indian languages are better in that they communicate so much Sanskritic conceptions. And even if they're not expressed in Sanskritic terms, the conceptions are there. This is the point. Just like in Tamil, they're using so many terms. They have the same ideas, but they're not expressing them in Sanskritic ways. But the concept is there. This is the point. Whereas in English, as I said, I gave this example. I often give this example. The word dharma, we don't really have the conception of that, what it means. There's no word for it in English because the conception doesn't require that word. If a non-existent conception has no need for a word to describe itself. The conception is missing. This is the problem. So in India, the conception is there, and the language has expressed that conception. That is the superiority. That's one thing. And then also in the Indian languages, Krishna Katha is infinitely more delectable because every word is loaded with connotation. Hundreds and thousands of years of associations that resonate with whatever you're hearing at the moment. It makes it very rich. Sanskrit in particular is like that, but any of the Indo-Aryan languages, because they're all Sanskritic, you know, and even some of the Dravidian languages are also like that. So I think they're better. That's why Prabhupada told us, he gave us all these songs in Bengali. Nobody knows Bengali, right? For very few people, some of us here, are Bengali's mother tongue, but still, it's very, very helpful. The language itself is a conduit, we say, in electrical terms. It carries the current of the spiritual conception within itself, embodied within itself. Union of sound and sense, as the poets say. That is 20. Okay.